Welcome to the Zimcast, a program dedicated to bringing you what's new in agricultural marketing. The Zimcast is the official podcast of AgWired and hosted by Chuck and Cindy Zimmerman.
Hello and welcome to the Zimcast. I'm Chuck Zimmerman. Before we get into this week's program, let me thank our sponsors, and that includes, first of all, Novus International, leaders in the poultry, pork, beef, dairy, and aqua industries, as well as Leica Geosystems. When it has to be right, go to agguidance.com. In this week's program, we're going to continue my series of interviews with leadership at some of the advertising and public relations and marketing agencies out there. This week, we're going to learn what's new with Weber Shandwick, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves here in our conversation. Let's learn a little bit more about this agency from two of their leaders, and I'm going to let you guys introduce yourself first of all, so go ahead.
Well, good afternoon, Chuck. I'm Jody George, a leader of the Farm and Food Advocacy Practice at Weber Shandwick. And we are happy to be speaking with you today. Weber Shandwick is one of the world's leading public relations agencies.
And Chuck, my name's David Krage. I've been with Weber Shandwick for 13 years now, and I lead the digital and social media team here in Minneapolis, and I'm part of the larger leadership team for Weber Shandwick overall.
Wonderful. Well, there's a number of questions that I'd like to ask so we can learn a little bit more about the agency. And I guess one of those first ones is to tell me a little bit about your agency, maybe from a historical perspective, and include in there how you are working in the agribusiness sector.
Yeah, Weber Shandwick is a global public relations agency. We have offices actually in 74 countries around the world. 19 of those offices are here in the United States, and David and I are talking to you today from our Minneapolis office, and our Minneapolis office is about 26 years old now, and really throughout the history of our office, we've been involved in the food and agricultural issues and working with clients. So agriculture is certainly something we've believed in for a long time and have organized around a couple of different practices that really are deeply involved across the food farm-to-fork chain. And those would be our consumer food practice, our food issues practice, and our new farm and food advocacy practice, which is centered here in Minneapolis. But then we have colleagues, of course, in our Chicago, our Seattle, D.C., and soon to be Denver offices.
Well, when you mention farm and food advocacy, that kind of catches my attention right away because there seems to be such a top of mind amongst all agribusiness companies and organizations right now about advocating for the industry. Is that what you're referring to?
We are, and Chuck, certainly know that you're yourself a leader in that movement, and our farm and food advocacy practice, certainly one of the core areas that we're focused on would be helping producer and commodity organizations build those advocacy programs. And, you know, to that end, last year, our Weber Shandwick team won the Best of NAMA PR program for our work around the My Dairy advocacy program that is we worked on in partnership with Dairy Management Incorporated. But I think there are a couple of other areas we're focused on, too, within this farm and food advocacy practice, and that's crisis and issues, readiness and response, and then also launching new products, either for an agricultural target audience or helping agricultural companies communicate to consumers, which also certainly has an advocacy role as well.
That all sounds great. In fact, as you probably know, I mean, I have used dairy farmers as, you know, a commodity area that I have seen probably some of the more advanced and early adopters when it comes to social media for advocating for their industry, for example, and that program in particular. So definitely one that I think we can look to and as sort of a good example of how an organization can make use of these tools on behalf of their membership in this case.
Absolutely, and we are so proud of our partnership with the dairy industry, and not only Dairy Management Incorporated, but many other state, regional, and national dairy organizations. They really understand the importance of communicating a story directly to a target audience. And dairy producers across the country have really stood up and said, you know, I want to take responsibility for telling my story. So they're to be commended as well.
One of the things that we focus on, where I'm going to publish this on agwire.com, is our tagline, "What's New in the World of Agribusiness." So let's apply that question to Weber Shandwick. What if somebody said, well, what's new, what would you tell them?
Well, we are certainly proud to formally announce our farm and food advocacy practice. As I mentioned, we have certainly been working across agriculture for many years, but with the announcement of this practice, are excited to share what's different about Weber Shandwick. And one of the main things around that would be we are a big agency, but we do offer that small team feel as well. And David Krage is sitting in the room with me here and certainly is leading some other new offerings from Weber Shandwick.
Yeah, and listening to just the conversation already talking about advocacy and agriculture, I think one of the things that's most exciting is that advocacy, which, you know, Weber Shandwick's tagline is advocacy starts here, which so therefore it extends across all of our clients, of course. But in agribusiness, it's, I think, even more accentuated and more interesting because advocacy happens best where a person is most passionate about something. And clearly in this industry, the stakeholders are incredibly passionate about what they're doing. So my world, the digital world and the social media world, can really have a lot of, you know, it's a very interesting industry to work in that particular part of the field because of the passion level is so high, therefore the advocacy level can be high as well. However, like so many things, the flip side of that is anytime that there's something, you know, actively pro for something, there's also the potential for negativity as well, because there's always going to be, you know, detractors or adversaries to whatever anyone is passionate about. So long way of saying, I think one of the newer things that we're doing here at Weber Shandwick is, while we have always been involved in crisis and issues management for our clients for, you know, decades, because that's part and parcel to what being in public relations is, we have, through the course of going through and helping clients with some social media crises, that is to say crises that erupt in social media and spread so quickly virally in social media, having helped some clients work through those issues in a real-time situation, we've ultimately developed a tool that we call Firebell, which allows companies to prepare for and literally practice what it's like to go through that situation. So, you know, a case in point could be if something happens and your Facebook page gets attacked by, you know, hundreds, potentially thousands of people screaming at you on your own Facebook page. Or in Twitter, people are talking negatively about you. All of a sudden, you wake up one morning and there are, you know, hundreds or thousands of negative tweets where your hashtag is an insult to your brand. We have developed a tool, an application that we built here in Minneapolis, as I said, called Firebell, that literally, like a fire drill does, you know, in elementary school when the bell goes off and you have to run out the doors and really feel what it's like to have an actual fire, Firebell actually puts our clients through the paces, and they have to respond to tweets, they have to respond to blog posts and Facebook posts and do so immediately, and if they don't, all the repercussions follow. So I think that's one of the more definitely new, because we just launched it in the last couple weeks, and so we've done it with several clients already, and it's really been an exciting tool to play with. Has a bit of a video game feel actually during the drill, because there's this volley, there's this dialogue, and as I'm sure you know as well as anyone, Chuck, that the difference between a social media crisis and a traditional crisis is the fact that social adds dialogue to the equation, mm-hmm. whereas a traditional crisis, you know, that a company could make a formal statement in a press conference or in a news release. Now in social, that press conference never ends. It's 24/7, and the audience is definitely a lot less tactful sometimes than in a traditional press conference.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what I think is fascinating as I've done these interviews is how significant this digital world is when it comes to any type of marketing, communications, advertising, public relations, you name it. And again, I'm hearing that here. How would you describe how important this has become? And I mean, it really sounds like it's become a very significant component of your practice and the type of service you're offering to your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. We have this methodology, slogan, mantra, we'll call it what you will, that we call inline, which is to say that, you know, people don't get their news or their information from one source anymore. They don't just watch the nightly news and maybe read the paper the next morning. They do both of those things still, definitely, but they also hear things from their friends who heard something from their friends on Facebook, etc. Inline simply means marrying offline communication and online communication and putting those two things together. So we try very hard for every campaign, every client, everything that we do to marry those two things together, to definitely not ignore the importance of traditional media, because it's still is very much important, but to marry that together with online communications as well and social media, so that people are getting information from the various sources that they seek out each day. It's so much more fragmented today that, especially as a PR firm, we need to go out there and focus on many, many more sources for people to receive that information. So if you're asking the question how important it is, I mean, you're asking a guy that has, it's kind of self-serving for me to answer since it's my job. So I'm going to say, yeah, it's real important. But kidding aside, I believe it is very important. And we here at Weber, you know, we have a very large digital and social media team that works with every account team in this office. And we have well over 200 people just in the United States alone that focus on social media. And I'll add to that the caveat, that doesn't mean that they have a title that just says social media guy or something like that. These are people that are working in traditional and social media, and as I said, making it all in line together with the account teams and the clients.
Something that I'll pose here that I haven't before, but I think it's incredibly important in our world, speaking digitally here, is because this is so measurable, people seem to get caught up in the statistics in terms of, you know, everything from how many page views my website has to how many followers I have on Twitter or you know, all those kinds of things. How do you put together some sort of a way to measure what you're doing on behalf of your clients or how well it's performing for them, not just in necessarily in terms of, you know, the actual numbers, but what do they actually mean? Have you guys figured out a way to do that yet?
Well, you know, we're definitely trying to figure that out, and I think we've made great headway. And I'll start by answering it with a little anecdote. In about 2001 or 2002, we started at Weber making these things called internet press kits, which by the definition, you can probably guess what they are. They were, you know, PR kits that went out to the media that were photos and the news release and fact sheets and that kind of thing. And it was the beginning of the replacement of the traditional FedEx package that we would send out to the media with all that same information. And so we started manufacturing those in Minneapolis, and right away we were able to, you know, to see how many people opened these press kits and so forth. So the question came back, well, 74% of the media opened it. Is that good? Or 50% opened it? And it occurred to us quickly that, every now and then someone would say, that's not enough, it needs to be more. Well, we could never track the FedEx opens.
Right.
So it was a little unfair. You know, we quickly realized that what we need to do is start setting up benchmarks and literally look at all these press kits we put out for 6 months or a year and then define it by industry. And it's only, I think, the over time to see if numbers go up or go down that is particularly fair. I mean, we have clients that have, you know, 5 million Facebook fans. Is that number good? Well, it's a really big number, but some of our clients have an entire, you know, customer base or audience of maybe 400 or 4,000 if they're in the B2B market for a very niche product. So maybe 40 views on YouTube would be an incredible number for them because they've got all of 100 people that would really ever buy their product. So what we do then is start benchmarking those numbers and say, you know, you've got 1,400 page views on your homepage this month. Let's watch it for 3 months after we do some social media activities. If that number goes up, we can extrapolate that we must be doing something right. We would never say that 100% of that increase is because of social media, but I think it gives us, you know, at least a line in the sand by which to measure ourselves. So I completely agree with you. The ability to track and to count in all these metrics that we can do is a bit of a double-edged sword, because sometimes they're meaningless, you know, and sometimes they put us in this box of what does it mean, what does it not mean. And to carry that even further, it gets more, you know, traditionally when we were measuring a PR campaign, say 5 years ago, we would measure the number of newspaper the circulation for all the newspapers and perhaps radio and TV as well, never taking into account, for example, that some of those newspapers are not getting read. Some of those newspapers are being dropped at the door in front of a hotel room and are definitely not getting read. But still, the PR industry had defined that circulation of those newspapers was the number by which we would measure. Now we know actually, to carry that metaphor, we know actually who the people are picking up the papers. Now we're talking about digital, of course. We know somebody who was actually at the page, not just theoretically was at the, you know, reading that particular newspaper, much less did they go to the seventh page of the E section. So long way of saying, I think it definitely, the best way to measure is to just start measuring one day and then measure against yourself over time and, of course, against your competitors over time as well.
And Chuck, I think you've hit on a larger issue across the marketing industry in terms of measurement and how do you take what you're doing on social media and fit those numbers into the larger mix of the tactics that you might be doing both in person, online, with traditional media. And one of the things that we're really interested in doing with our clients at Weber Shandwick is taking all of the information David talked about, all of the other numbers and statistics, and putting it into a measurement dashboard, but not stopping there. Going then with our back to our clients and their sales teams and saying, okay, now let's help tie these results and these statistics into what it was worth in terms of sales. And when we can do that with a client, you can really understand how your marketing mix is impacting your business. But to go back to what David said, benchmarking is also very important because you need to understand once you benchmark what the marketing mix means, you need to have continuous improvement once you do that.
Well, I think that those are all great points, and I know that there are going to be people who will hear this that I think that's going to be helpful because they've been trying to wrap their mind around this, even though maybe they have already kind of dipped their toe in the social media water, for example. Let's pose another question here, and that is, what would be kind of like the main or top thing that you would like people to know about Weber Shandwick and what you guys are doing, especially as it would be of interest to relate to the agribusiness industry?
You know, it's interesting because when myself and my colleagues from the Farm and Food Advocacy Team at Weber Shandwick are out at industry meetings, sometimes we encounter different folks who aren't even aware that Weber Shandwick has this specialty area and is deeply passionate about food and agriculture. And so when you ask for one thing that we'd like people to know, I think that first and foremost, it's that Weber Shandwick is really passionate about helping build and maintain brands and reputations from farm to fork. And we're looking forward to educating more people about our capabilities, not only in food and agriculture, but social media, media training, all of those tactics that feed into a really well-rounded reputation and brand management plan.
Anything else that you would like to maybe bring up or touch on that we haven't?
One thing I would take a step back is to share, you know, our tagline, Weber Shandwick's tagline, Advocacy Starts Here, is really something that drives us every day. No matter how technologically savvy we get with social media, online, sometimes and many times really, we're also going back to the basics of who do people trust. And once we clearly define a target audience, can work with our clients to figure out who does that target audience trust, how do we get to those influencers, and then turn them into advocates, either for an issue, for a product, for an entire industry. And that's really one I feel is a special thing that Weber Shandwick can bring to the table, and it's what really excites me about coming to work every day.
Let's tell people how to find you and where they can get more information.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a number of ways to get in touch with Weber Shandwick. First of all, WeberShandwick.com is always a great portal of information. I would also direct folks to our farmandfoodadvocacy.mn website, and there you can find specific information about our farm and food advocacy practice at Weber Shandwick. My contact, Jody George, is right on that website, along with the other leader of our farm and food advocacy practice, Polly O'Grady. And our lines of communication, whether it be phone, email, Twitter, you name it, they're always open.
Well, I want to thank you both, Jody and David, for taking some time to talk with me and bringing us up to date on what's new with Weber Shandwick.
Thank you much, Chuck.
Well, that is the Zimcast for this week. I'm going to leave you with some music here from Music Alley. This is a song called Can I? It's a live blues jam by MSU Orchestra. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Zimcast, the official podcast of AgWired. Check us out at www.agwired.com to find out what's new in agricultural marketing.